Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. You know, we're all going through rapid change right now. Change is accelerating. Have you noticed that? I bet you have. Well, today we're going to talk about leadership as we go through rapid change. You know, if you're going 90 miles an hour, quite frankly, you're probably missing half of your life. So if that's you, this is going to be a good show for you because we're going to be talking about how you can slow down. I mean, I have a saying, slow down to succeed. You know, it's like, if you want to have strategies in your life, you want to create strategy, you stop, you get still before you develop those strategies. And, you know, I think it's the other part. I think it's like when we get still, we start to tune into what is our real purpose? What is our vision? What is our values that we want to instill in whatever we are leading, right? If you're leading a company, if you're leading a football team, if you're leading your family, it's all pretty much the same. We have to slow down to succeed. And, you know, it takes courage, I believe, to really let go. And in my case, I let go and let God, right? I let this higher energy, this higher purpose, this higher power work through me, but I have to stop. And I bet you do too. So today, it's a day that you can kind of relax and sit back. I've got a very special guest today on my show, which I always do. You know, we always get these amazing guests on this show. And I'm hoping, by the way, that you have already subscribed to our YouTube channel, because if you haven't, I really encourage you to. You don't want to miss any of these shows. These shows are inspiring, uplifting, and quite frankly, we bring on people that have a lot of experience on these shows and they have established wisdom. You know, we don't need any more information. Just Google it or use your AI now and you can find all the information you need. But what we do need today is wisdom, especially wisdom around our leadership. So we're going to also be talking a little bit about what are the key elements to effective leadership, right? You know, one of the key elements that I know is you got to be transparent, right? You got to be transparent. If you're a leader that's telling people what to do, when to do, and how to do it, that's okay, you know. But I have to tell you that if you're not transparent with your team, then what's going to happen is they're going to resent you, and you don't want that. So, you know, we're going to take a deep dive into all of this. And, you know, I'm going to question too a little bit about the adaptability. How adaptable are you? Okay. How adaptable? You know, leaders are adaptable. We have to adapt quickly. I had to adapt today. Yeah. I had a couple of guests cancel out on me and now I'm shuffling things. We just adapt. But, you know, it's interesting with adaption because a lot of people can adapt, but can you adapt with even-mindedness? In other words, you're not getting upset. Okay, you know, you're not overexcited about it. You're not depressed about it. You're just even-minded. You're taking care of business. Well, this and a whole bunch more is going to be coming your way as soon as I take a break. And we'll have my guest. We'll be right back.
Whether because of discomfort, lack of mobility, your lifestyle, or occupation, you sit inactively way too many hours a day. Introducing Ellipse, the premium quality automatic seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation without physical strain or impact.
It is so quiet that none of my coworkers even know I'm using it.
Strengthen and tone your legs. Increase your mobility, flexibility, and balance. Plus, stimulate healthy circulation.
My joints feel better, my knees feel better, my back feels better. It makes me feel stronger too.
Perfect for home therapy. Whisper quiet to use while you work.
My circulation is moving, I'm burning calories, and it makes me feel energetic.
Call now and order Ellipse, the seated exerciser that strengthens legs, increases mobility, and boosts circulation. Call and get upgraded to the deluxe bundle. Get the faster motor for 5 miles of steps per hour, the step counter, the sport mat, and wireless remote. Call now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. My very special guest today is Jay Paterno. Jay, welcome to the show.
Great to be on, Ken.
Yeah, you know, it's so good to see you, man. For those of you that don't know Jay, he is a well-known author, coach, college football expert with over two decades of coaching experience, including 17 years at Penn State. Jay has been his firsthand knowledge of intense pressures of the sport. His latest book, Blitzed, which we'll be talking about in just a minute, the all-out pressure of college football's new era, dives into the challenges facing modern college football, from big money and NIL deals to mental health struggles and so much more. Joe, Jay, it's really great to have you. You know, your dad was Joe, but you're Jay. Okay.
Well, the legal name is Joseph, so I mean, you are okay. But my mom didn't want two Joes in the house. One was enough.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, maybe I'm tuning into that. Okay, good. You saved me. All right. Well, listen, you know, I'd like to, before we get into the book and what have you, your experience at Penn State, you want to talk about that a little bit and give us a little foundation for your background there?
Well, I started coaching. I got out of Penn State. I played at Penn State, got out of there in the early 90s, coached at the University of Virginia for a Hall of Fame coach in George Welsh, coached at James Madison University, University of Connecticut, then came to Penn State for 17 years and started as a recruiting coordinator and a tight end coach. And the recruiting part of it is really interesting because you're dealing with young people and their aspirations and what they want to do with their lives and trying to also put together a team. And I think one of the things that we can talk about as we go is putting together a roster is easy. You can put together a bunch of guys that all play certain positions and know their roles, but are they truly a team? And I think what you're seeing now is more success with people that are building teams as opposed to high-priced rosters. But those 17 years really had a big impact on the way I looked at things. And then for 12 of those years, I coached quarterbacks, which I don't know there's a more visible position in any sport in major sports in America than that, and the ability to help people get through that and make decisions and react and lead their group, you know, the team that's on the field through those kind of pressures was something that was never ever evolving process.
Well, you know, college football has changed a lot over the last couple decades, and there's a lot of pressures that I believe are facing modern college football. I know you addressed that in the book. Let's explore that a little bit. What are some of the pressures that are going on out there right now?
Well, a couple of years ago, it became legal for student athletes to utilize their own name, image, and likeness to make money. So they could do commercials. And now all of a sudden, there's an element of money that's involved in this. So now for those athletes, there are pressures from fans to perform, from coaches to perform on the field. There are pressures from family members that see big-time college football as a pathway to being set for life financially, whether it be the NFL or through these NIL deals. So there's those pressures. And on top of all of that, these guys are supposed to go to school and succeed in the classroom. That has created a level of pressures for the players. The coaches have to manage guys that can go from one school to the other anytime they want. So they've got to deal with that, as well as demands for money. And it becomes very difficult, all these things that are all evolving constantly, because there's no set of rules right now. They vary state to state. So it's all that. And then when you talk about that, what does that do to the mental health of the young people that are playing the game? What kind of pressure does that put on the coaches, their mental health, because it's 24/7 now? Things can blindside them at any time, and they've got to have a life work balance as well. So these things are all changing. There is no set foundation as to what's the new norm yet.
That's so interesting. Well, there's always been pressure on players and pressures on coaches and that type of thing. But what you're saying is just accelerating at a level that we haven't seen before. What is happening in the players? You know, I don't know if you look at any stats or anything with the mental health of the coaches and players right now. Is that being impacted in a negative way, or what's that?
Yeah, there's no question in talking to some people, because I do consult with some NIL stuff with people around the country, and they're seeing kids that are reporting that this is putting a lot of pressure on them, but they're not necessarily seeing an increase of, especially in college football, where, you know, you're taught to be manly and tough and, you know, have thick skin and you don't ever admit a weakness. It's been very hard to get the coaches, especially, but also players, to own up to and go get help. So the number, the data isn't really there yet. It'll be curious to see as this goes in a couple of years. The NFL has made a really, really pronounced effort. A guy I coached at Penn State named Michael Robinson played for the Seattle Seahawks and 49ers as with the NFL Network. He's been one part of the face of that effort to try and get NFL players to deal with mental health issues. A guy named Pete Carroll, a coach at USC, was at the Seahawks, who's now with the Raiders. He was a big proponent of mental health as an indicator or a help to be successful. So you're starting to see those barriers break down and that resistance break down, but I don't really have numbers yet to really back.
I have another show we do. It's called Heal It. We bring in doctors and naturopaths and practitioners and people that know cause and cure, as opposed to just treating symptoms. And, you know, I've got a lot of them on there that, that tell me that, about 80%, even higher, some of them, percent of disease in the body is caused through emotional traumas, mental health issues, which is very interesting because I think in the scheme of things, in the it's like to be mentally healthy, I think is such a key in the college football area. And what I'm saying is that because that sets a foundation for life, right?
Absolutely. It's incredibly vital. And look, when I stopped coaching about 13 years ago, but you know, no one talked about mental health then. You know, coaches had to have a feel for, you got to know your players. And one of the things we always told ourselves is remember, they're not robots. Everybody's different. Everybody's got different motivations. Everybody's coming to you with different goals and different pressures. And our job as coaches was to really get to know what made everybody tick. So in a way, we were handling some of the mental health stuff, but none of us had degrees in it. None of us. And we did a good job for the most part simply because of that. But now with so many things going on, it's hard for coaches to deal with that. Now, as a member of Penn State's Board of Trustees, I know that not just athletes, but across young people, all across campus, all of our students, the demand for psychological services has gone through the roof. A lot of people coming out of the COVID, the lockdowns and those things as they've gotten to college and trying to adjust with being at a major university like Penn State. So we've invested a lot of money and resources into those things, which I think is vitally important.
Yeah, it's vitally important. You know, for 3 decades, I operated as a life coach. So, I help people to balance out their lives and help them to get the help that they need. And, you know, inevitably, you know, those that could be honest with themselves, that were able to be vulnerable, those are the ones that would excel tremendously, you know, and get the help that they need. And I think that is shifting in at least in the world. I think mental health is not the stigma it was 20 years ago that, people never talked about at all. Because I think in this day and age, if you're not talking about what's the results that you want to get, mental health issues, as you know, we get a lot of times it shows up in the results of the players. It shows up in, if they've got issues that they're not dealing with, they're less effective. Their performances, it will go down and they suffer and the team suffers. So I think it's a topic that I'm glad it's being addressed. That's great.
Yeah, you know, going back 20 years ago, we had a guy who was a starting quarterback, and he got beat out. And about 8 or 9 weeks into the season, the starting quarterback gets hurt. And the kid that had been the starter had some good games. Well, he comes in and just has a horrible, horrible game. And so that on Monday was when we looked at the game film, the previous game on Saturday. We would give them Sunday off so they could catch up with academics, that kind of stuff. So we come in to look at the game film, and I said, look, we're not going to look at the game film from Saturday because that's not you. What happened Saturday was from here up, not from here down. You know how to throw the ball. You know how to run. You know how to do the things you need to do. But something got you here. So I took out the best game that he had played in his career, and I said, we watched as a group with all the other guys in offense that were in the room with us, and I said, that's the guy that's going to have – that's you, that's what you're capable of, and that's what's going to have to show up next Saturday. Went out and had the best game of his career. We won the game. And, you know, and that was one of those things where I don't know why I did it. It was one of those things I woke up on Sunday and said, I got to find a way around this. It wasn't any stroke of genius. It was simply I took a walk and this popped into my head and it worked out. And I think, that, like you said, it's so important to have the right mindset.
Well, mindset is a lot. I think what you did there, showing that film too, and reestablishing inside of him that he's got the everything he needs. I think that visualization piece seems to be a really important piece. How important is visualization in today's games?
Oh, I think it's very important. I think so much of what people are doing now is people try to use virtual reality, all those kind of things to try and get that done. It's still a work in progress. I mean, we even going back to 2005, we were taking memory cards on the Madden on what was the PlayStation back then, PlayStation 1. We put our plays on there with our terminology on there. So, and we had a big screen in our meeting room so guys could go in and play using our terminology and get familiar with it and see themselves in this Madden game. So it's been something that everybody's tried to find a way. But it was, I know when I first brought the idea up to my dad, was the head coach, he said, you want them to play video games? I said, well, I'd explain it to him because that's beyond, that's a different, it was a change.
Different generation, right?
But once we explained to him, he goes, yeah, go get it. I said, how much it costs us? He said, oh, probably a couple $100 for a PlayStation. He said, that's it? I said, sure, yeah. So it was better than going and spending $100,000 on some virtual reality stuff.
That's really great. Well, listen, I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to take a little deep dive into your book, Blitzed, and we're going to talk about some of the outcomes that people will get when they read it and how it might shift their mindset by picking up a copy. So we'll be right back, and we'll have that discussion.
Imagine this is your money, and someone wants to take it from you. Who is it? The IRS. Guess what? They want your money, and they can take it, all of it if they want. Remember, they sent you that letter right over here that said, hey, you owe us a bunch of cash, and we're going to take it from you right now. So what do? You fight back by letting our team of experts work it out with the IRS so you can keep your money. And hey, we're good at what we do. When you hire us, you get a team of guys on your side that know the IRS laws, and we'll fight really hard to save your money. So, if you owe the IRS a ton of cash and you want to keep it, call right now and learn for free how we can help you put it back in your pocket. 5 minutes of your time right now can save you thousands of dollars. And the best part, it's a free call, so please call right now.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kennedy Foster. We'll be right back with my guest, Jay Paterno, in just a moment. I want to mention that you can see all of our shows if you go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Just go over there to youtube.com/@thecouragenetwork, youtube.com/@thecouragenetwork, so you don't miss any of our shows and you get to pass them on to your family and friends. All right. Yo, Joseph J.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Hey, okay, so Blitz, man. First of all, I love the title of the book. I think we'll put it up on screen for a second so everybody can see it. It's called Blitz, the All-Out Pressure of College Football's New Era. This is a fictional book, right? And first of all, why'd you write?
Well, it's really what I call nonfiction fiction. So it's real stories. So I had written a book about my dad after he passed back in, I think it came out in 2014. And then in looking for the next book project to do, I had friends of mine said, all these stories you've told us about what goes on in college football, you need to write a book. So I started to write a book. And then I realized if I write this as nonfiction, the lawyers are going to have to comb through it. Friends of mine may, I just said, you know what? I don't need somebody blowing my car up because I told stories about what goes on in college football. So I wrote it as nonfiction fiction, and that was called Hot Seat. And that was in 2020. So what's happened in the next 4 years, people said, well, you know, now that all these other things have changed, you need to write a follow-up to that book. So it's really a follow-up to that book. So these are all things that if you're a college football fan or if you're just interested in what's going on in the sport right now, this is the first book that really takes you behind the scenes, tells real stories, but does it in a way where we protect the names of the innocent, the not so innocent, and the outright guilty of things that are going on. So it really, but it takes you into all the dynamics that have changed, not just the transferring and the money that's involved and the pressures involved, but even some of the dynamics where now you're seeing women that are in coaching, women that have roles in athletics and higher education or college football that they didn't have. So how do they deal with those things? So all these things are shifting, and it really does take you into the, and some of the things you have to learn to adjust to.
I love that. So what will your reader walk away with when they read this book? What do you hope for them to walk away with? Let's put it.
I think to walk away with an idea that, you know, whether it's college coaching or whether it's anything in business leadership, there are going to be changes. If nothing is constant in this world except change, there are ways you have to deal with that change. And it comes down to having a set of core foundational values. The fictional coach in this has a certain way he wants to do things, but he's being pulled to do things differently than maybe he wants. There are a lot of challenges to his core values that he's got to navigate. But at the end of the day, whether you're successful or not is going to really come down to having that set of core foundational values and then adapting methods, not values, to be successful.
Well, you, the name, image, likeness piece, I did want to take a deeper dive into that because I think that's really impacting, like you said earlier in the show, it's starting to really, you know, impact. What would you say the downside of this is for the game and for the fans, you know, maybe for the coaches today? The downside, even for the players, I want to know the downside. And we know the upside, they get money and, you know, things like that. What's the downside?
Well, the downside is the pressures that come with it, because you as a 19-year-old or an 18-year-old or 20-year-old football player, 10 years ago, if you had a bad game, the kind of default for the fans was, oh, well, you know, he's a 19-year-old kid. He's playing the game because he loves it kind of thing.
Yeah.
They have professionalized themselves, and as a result, the fans have become professionalized. And to make money, you have to have a presence on social media. So if you go out and throw 3 interceptions and lose a game, you still have to go out and post about whatever company you're supposed to post about. And while you're doing that, you're going to see fans that absolutely attack you, and they think they know how much money you're making. And it creates this element of the fans, because you're taking money, they feel like they own a piece of you, and they expect a higher level of performance.
Interesting. You know, I was watching TV one day, probably 15 years ago, and Madonna came on, and they were asking her, well, what does she do? What do you do with all the negative press that you get? And she said, well, I don't pay attention to it. And then right after that, Hillary Clinton came on and said the same thing when an interviewer was asking her, do we have any kind of training or anything for our college athletes that are being, you know, bombarded with this negative press now and then? Sometimes they get great press, of course, but, you know, with the negative press, how do they handle it? Because I think that can be a very traumatizing for some young people.
No question. When I coach quarterbacks and social media, you know, started and you know, guys would have bad games and people come after them. And I would tell them the same thing, similar to what Madonna, we talk about Madonna, you're talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton. You know, yeah. If I don't read it, and as a coach, I would get it too. If I don't read it, it doesn't exist. Now, I had a brother that would call and say, do you know what they wrote about you? I'm like, well, Scott, I did not read it, so I didn't know, but apparently I know now. But you can't let those things touch your soul. At the end of the day, you have to understand the only criticism that matters is the constructive criticism you get from your coaches and those kind of people. Now, it's easy to say that, And it's easy as a 45-year-old or a 50-year-old, 55-year-old to have that attitude. But when you're 19 years old and 18 years old and you're looking for positive reinforcement, especially now that, you know, social media is accelerating to the point where all you ever see is famous people that are always happy. They're always where they're supposed to be. They're always beautiful. It's always sunny. You never see them saying, you know what? I had to pick up my dog's crap in the backyard today and it was raining and cold. You know, you never see that from that. So there's this perception that life is always perfect. So, you know, and the worst thing you can do, and we tell guys this all the time and schools do it, is to get in a back and forth. Because once you get in the back and forth, they have more time and they have nothing to do rather than better to do than to come after you. So the best advice I ever got and gave is you don't get in a pissing contest with a skunk, because no matter how it ends up, you both come out stinking.
I love that. You know, I'm wondering, and you and I didn't talk about this beforehand. It's not on your, you know, your press sheets and stuff. So, you know, if you can't go there, that's okay. But I'm wondering how AI is going to impact what you think artificial intelligence is going to impact the game. How's that going to happen? What's going to happen?
Well, I think it's already impacted to an extent where you're seeing a lot of analytics come into the game. You're seeing a lot of predictive behavior that comes into the game. And I think it's got a place. But at the end of the day, some things that AI can't predict, somebody gets hurt. Or, you know, a course of a game, the best defender gets hurt. Well, we got to go attack that guy on offense. Or the quarterback gets hurt, and one quarterback has one style, another quarterback has another style, and you're not, may not be prepared for that. So I think it's got an element it's got some useful elements, but I also think that it can't be all that you rely on. I think also, it may have an impact in terms of recruiting where you're starting to get a feel for, you can analyze things that guys have said and whatever, and get a feel for what is important to them in the recruiting process and what differential you may have when you're trying to assemble a team.
Yeah, I think it's that. I know one thing AI doesn't do a good job at, and that is intuition. So it's not going to be a predictive of the quarterback's intuition that he, you know, decides to go the opposite way of all the predictions that he was going to do. So what are the biggest opportunities for improving the sport itself, do you see?
I think we have to be realistic in college football about what we are. And I say this as an old school guy who loved the amateur model. But the truth of the matter is, in the Big Ten Conference, for example, the media rights deal with the Big Ten is $1.1 billion a year. And we have to be honest about the fact that we are in the, we are running sports entertainment franchises on our campuses. Again, I don't necessarily like that, but that's realistic. So to make the game as stable as we can, you're going to need employment status. You're going to need probably collective bargaining, and you're going to need a series of legal decisions as well as legislative things that will set up universities so that there is an antitrust exemption so that they can get these things in place to settle everything down as it relates to the future of the game.
Well, you know, there's been a history of corruption, not a lot, but in the games, you know, how do you see, overcoming some of the corruption that might or might not still be there? You probably know a lot more than me. But the politics that surround the college and raising the monies and you know, getting the right players. And, you know, where do we see this going?
Well, I think corruption has always been part of the game. If you go back 100 years ago, Amos Alonzo Stagg, coach at the University of Chicago when they were still big-time football, he wrote a book called Touchdown. And then he talked about schools like Harvard, Yale, Princeton. They actually had guys on their football teams that were being paid that had never enrolled in the university. They weren't students. So this, some of the stuff is not new. And again, and through anything in history, if you go back long enough, you're going to find parallels somewhere. So that's the challenge it's going to be, is how do we make sure that corruption doesn't creep into this? And once you have a set of rules, the one thing that, as a trustee, I've explained to other members of our board of trustees, I said, as a former coach, the minute you set up a set of rules, we're looking for the loophole around it, because that's what we do. If you're coaching offense, you're looking for the hole in the defense. If you're coaching defense, you look for the weakness on their offense and you try to exploit those things. So once a rule is in place, says this is what's allowed, we're immediately looking for the loophole. And then he passed a rule to block that. We look for the next loophole. So that's what we do. So that's going to be the challenge as they go forward. And that's, you know, that's an age old challenge.
Yeah, it's an age old challenge. Maybe AI will help with that a little bit. You know, that we'll see. Listen, I got to take a quick break. But before I do, I want to mention your book again to my listening audience out there. The book is Blitzed, B-L-I-T-Z-E-D, Jay Paterno, P-A-T-E-R-N-O. You can get it on Amazon or wherever great books are sold. So I encourage you to go out there and find that book and take a deep dive. Get to know what's going on in the sport today. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone watching at home. We're here to remind you that if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have live agents available right now to answer your questions and tell you how much your case is potentially worth. Hi, I'm Gina Belich, here with spokesman and TV personality Tom Mustin with us in the Help Center. So, Tom, phones are really busy over there. Tell us what kind of calls you're seeing.
Well, Gina, first off, thank you for having me here in the call center with you. We always enjoy talking to the viewers and getting folks the compensation that they deserve. You know, we're seeing calls about all kinds of accidents, but the most common by far has been car accidents. So if you or someone you know were injured in an accident that was not your fault, give us a call right now. You'll speak with a live person. They'll answer any questions you have and tell you if you have a case and how much your case is potentially worth.
Thanks, Tom. All right, folks at home, you heard it. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here. Did you know that I wear hearing aids? I love my hearing aids, and I am here to help you get a deal on the same brand I wear.
Don't waste thousands on expensive hearing aids when you can get MD Hearing's revolutionary Neo hearing aids for just $297 a pair. The Neo is a true hearing aid, not an amplifier. With rechargeable technology many customers say is superior to more expensive models. And you can get two Neo hearing aids with a 45-day risk-free trial, free shipping, and free lifetime U.S.-based support for only $297. The Neo is nearly invisible with its tiny in-the-ear canal design.
Call my friends at MD Hearing and get the over-the-counter hearing aids that I use for you.
Call now and get not one, but two Neo hearing aids for just $297.
800-789-7885. Again, that's 800-789-7885.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. You know, our little motto is see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible. You know, how do you teach players out there? I wonder, you're a coach, you know, how do you teach players to see things differently, to open up their minds, to be able to embrace things that they don't know and be able to create a little more wisdom in their world?
Well, I think the biggest thing when you're going to lead is to help them see things that they can't see. And you have to have credibility to do that. And so when you come at them with a track record, if you've had previous success, it's easier to kind of get them to take that plunge. If you're just starting out, though, I think the important thing is to get them to trust in themselves. And one of the things we used to do in practice, we would take practices and say, look, you're never going to know what throw you can make as a quarterback unless you try it in practice. So, you know, don't worry about making a mistake in practice. Don't worry about throwing an interception if you take a chance. As long as you can say to me, hey, look, the reason I threw it there is I wanted to see if I could get it there. And now I know I can't, or now I know I can. So we want to encourage them to take those chances in practice without saying, hey, this is going to eliminate you from being the starter if you make so many mistakes in practice. Now, there are times when you're competing in practice, and now you say, okay, now we've gotten to the point where you're ready to compete. Let's see what you can do. But you got to allow them to have some failures when the cameras aren't on them and that kind of stuff. And then that way they kind of know what they can do. And a lot of times guys will say, boy, I didn't know I could make that throw until you made me do it. And you try and make them do things that are difficult. And one of the things we tried to do in practice all the time was make practice more challenging at a different pace than the game. So when they got in the game, you could slow down for them. And those are the things that we did to try and help them see what they could do.
That's interesting. You know, I've coached a lot of people over the years, and you know, one of my principles is to slow down to succeed. And I'm wondering if you apply that at all in your coaching or you know, in the games.
Absolutely. We talk about a couple of things. One, I would say, hustle, don't hurry, because those are two different mindsets. One of the lessons I learned from my dad. My dad had a rotary phone until AT&T or whatever it was at that time said, our lines don't support rotary phones anymore. And I said, why rotary phone? He said, because if I get upset with someone, by the time I dial 7 numbers and wait or 10 numbers and wait, I've had time to think about what I'm about to do or say. And he said, most often I put the receiver back on the hook and think about it and make notes. It goes back to one of Lincoln's lessons was when he was angry, he would write a letter to that person, put it in the desk overnight, the next morning, reread the letter and say, oh, okay, I still feel this way or I don't. And most times he would just tear up the letter and have a more rational response. So I think it's important to have the ability to slow things down to get to speed up. Because if you don't have that basis and you don't have that idea, it's really hard to accelerate. And when you're coaching football, the game happens so fast, you've got to be really situated mentally.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's the same thing with emails. I know that anytime I have an email that starts to go sideways, I pick up the phone. Just pick up the phone because, you know, we can't read emotion in emails and we don't really know we can read into our own thinking of what it might say, but we don't really necessarily know what's on the other end. You know, there's years ago, you know, I was kind of like a Disneyland kid. You know, I was out, you know, chasing fun, chasing, you know, girls, just having a good time, you know. And then at one point I got still one day and heard this little voice that said, you got to feel the pain to make the change. And I've applied that principle my whole life, you know, as a triathlete, I apply that, you know, we got to go through the discomfort sometimes to get to the other side, but we can't chase the, just the pleasures all the time. What's your thought about that?
I don't think there's any question. I think you've got to go through some trials. I think, you know, we learn the most from mistakes. It's hard to remember that, you know, every time we come in after a loss, we would learn more about who we were than after a win. The danger is you don't learn anything from a win. So we've always, there was a guy named Russ Rose who was a women's volleyball coach here at Penn State, won 6 national titles, just an incredible guy. But every play he would write down, this is the play I called. This is why it succeeded. Did it succeed because we made the right thing happen or did it succeed because we got lucky? So there's always an analysis of those things. So we go in the practice field. We had a blue line in our practice field. And the blue line was a symbolic, you know, be in the moment, whatever it is. But we basically said, when we cross that blue line, there's going to be difficult things. We're going to challenge you. We're going to make things hurt. But when you cross that blue line, you can't do anything about someone you're dating or do something about the math class you didn't do very well in, or if you have a sick relative. There's nothing you can do when you cross that blue line to change those things. You have to be totally present and be in here and learn. But the lesson also was when you go into a math class, cross the blue line because you can't do anything about the game you lost on Saturday or when you're home. And one of the best, you know, that became a situation where when I went home on at night and I was around my family, I couldn't be thinking about what we were going to do on third down on Saturday. I had to be there, cross that blue line as well. So all those things kind of came into those same lessons.
Well, you know, a friend of mine, John Foley, he was a Blue Angel for a while, and then he became the head of the flight school. And, you know, kind of like top, it is the top gun, the Blue Angels. And they always did and I'm sure this happens in football, but what they would do is they would do an assessment after every single flight, you know, what worked, what didn't work, what do we need to do to improve? And I'm sure that happens in college football. We're talking about it. But, you know, I'm wondering how much the players actually take that to heart and do it themselves, like at the end of their own day. what's working for me, what's not working for me, and where do I need to improve? What's your thought on that?
Oh, we tell in all the years coaching, I'd say, look, you've got to be honest about everything you do. And you and if you don't take the lessons and you're not willing to learn or look at tape on your own, because we can look at film and tape, showing my age, video now, everything's so digitized. If you're not taking the effort to go and do some things on your own, you're going to get to this point. The guys that really do the effort and do their own work get to this point. And if you're really motivated, it'll show in your play. It'll show in how you are mentally. It'll show whether you studied, and we'll know. And those are the guys are going to play. I mean, Tom Brady, probably the greatest winner of all time in the NFL. But his work ethic was legendary, and always because he wasn't the guy at Michigan that everybody wanted to play quarterback. There were other more highly recruited guys. He always had that, I have to do more. I have to do more. And he did it. Everybody forgets Michael Jordan was cut from his ninth grade basketball team, and that drove him his entire life. And he outworked everybody. It wasn't just a talent. And that's the difference. And we would use those examples with guys all the time. And the guys that really succeeded were the ones that did those things. And the rest of the guys in the team all saw that, and they knew who the workers were and who the workers weren't.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because those limiting beliefs that stop that one person from doing it, and the other person doesn't have those limiting beliefs, and they just go and do it. I think that's almost a wraparound where, you know, where we started with the emotional and mental and, you know, wellness issues. Because that really stops players from succeeding in a greater way when they got emotional baggage or they got something on their mind. They haven't been able to understand how to use their mind in a proper way. To accelerate and let go of some of those limiting beliefs.
Oh, there's no question. And look, everybody, we all have a comfort zone. There's things we like to do. A lot of guys like to go out and throw the ball around and have fun, but they don't like to get hit. Well, that's part of football. So you're going to get hit in practice. A lot of guys like looking at film, but they don't necessarily know how to study the film and really spend the time to get to know what they're looking at. So you have to push people outside of their comfort zone. That's part of being a leader. But at the same token, you have to be willing to push yourself out of a comfort zone, because if they see you staying in your comfort zone, they're going to feed off that. And if they see that you're asking them to make sacrifices that they wouldn't, we had team rules at Penn State, and they were just simply, we all gave something up to be part of it. Couldn't have facial hair, couldn't have beards, didn't have very long hair, a bunch of different things that we asked our guys to do, very similar to what the New York Yankees have done for years. And coaches had to follow the same thing. I couldn't grow a ponytail. I wouldn't want one. It wouldn't look good on me anyway. But the point being is I had to keep my hair cut a certain way. And so we all had to do certain things and be willing as coaches to make some of the same sacrifices our players did. So that became a real leadership point for us.
Well, you know, I think there's one key ingredient that if you have this, it makes all the difference in your personal life and in your business life. And now we're talking about on the field. And I think it's called discipline. And if we don't have discipline, right, then I'm not sure what we have. But what do you say to that?
There's no question. It especially in a sport like football, where 11 guys on the field have to really know what the other 10 guys are doing and know what they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it at the right time. And that's the whole thing. And whether it's football or whether it is business, you have to get the right people plugged into the right places, doing the right things and doing things that they can do, because otherwise they're not going to be successful. And that's the whole key to it. And I don't think there's any question, no matter what you get into, that's what you have to do.
Well, you know, Jay, you come from one of the most well-known families in football history. Your father's legacy influenced you, I'm sure, in different ways. You know, how did his approach influence you? And I'd love to hear like one or two thoughts that kind of go in your mind, maybe some of his wisdom that you've lived your life from.
Well, I think one of the best examples of things he said to me was, I was early on in my coaching career and I'd recruited a player that two things. One, from a leadership standpoint, it's not what you know, it's what they know. You've got to get, I mean, I could have all the wisdom in the world, but if I have no way to explain it or get guys to do it or understand what we're trying to do, then we're not going to be successful. So you got to have different ways you teach. You got to have different ways you reach people. And you've got to have a discipline, structured, foundational values that make you and what make your program what it is. So that's important. Now, the foundational value we had as it related to that was I didn't have kids at that time. And we were talking about a player that I had recruited that didn't necessarily had not panned out yet for, so to speak, ended up playing for us. And I said to him, oh, what a disappointment. And he said, you know, Jay, let me explain to you one thing. He said, you don't have kids yet. He said, but once you do, you'll realize that your happiness is defined by your least happy child. That's only as happy as you'll be. And he said, every guy we have on this team comes to us from somebody who invested 18 years of their life into them. And being happy is not giving them everything they want. It's preparing them for life. It's preparing them to have the structure and the things they're going to need to be successful. So that was really kind of the foundational value of that. And I think enough, and it really came down to that, along with the lesson that we're only as fast as our slowest player. We're only as strong as our weakest player. And we're only as smart as the guy who knows the least. So all those things kind of played into having a lot of great success on the field with our teams over the years. And that's really kind of the basis of success I think you can find in any endeavor.
I just love it. That's what I was looking for. I think you nailed it there. Thank you. For those of you that would like to know a little bit more about Jay Paterno, you can go to jvpaterno.com or my listening audience, JV. What does the B stand for, Jay?
Vincent.
Vincent, J.V. Paterno, P-A-T-E-R-N-O. And, of course, the book that I want to encourage everybody to go get, it's called Blitzed. Go get Blitzed. Hey, go get Blitzed. Why not? You know, you get blitzed anyway. Go get Blitzed. Yeah, thank you, Joe. Jay, I'm still doing the Joe thing. Anyway, yeah. Thank you, Jay. I really appreciate you being here today. Any final thoughts for the audience?
No, I just really enjoyed it, and I think that the more we talk about mental health, the more we talk about leadership the right way, I think it's better for everybody, especially in the times that we're living in right now.
Yeah. Well, I think the most courageous men on the field right now are those that can address their mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual needs, and they can talk about it, be authentic about it, and grow into it. We're all here learning and growing and evolving. And it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to admit your weaknesses, because that's really where the strength lies, when we can be vulnerable with our feelings, talk about them. As guys, it's okay. Everything changes. It changes for the better. Thank you so much, Jay.
Thanks.
And thank all of you for joining us today. I appreciate you being here. And I encourage you to look for and seek the unseeable and start to know the unknowable. Therefore, you'll be able to do the impossible. Till next time, take care.